from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning to you. I'm John Sepulveda. We begin with the story of a family reunified. 3 months ago, a little girl named Philomena was separated from her father in California as the two tried to cross the U.S. border. Her dad deported back to Guatemala. Philomena stayed in a foster care facility in New York, one of the more than 430 children separated from their deported parents. Well, yesterday, daughter and father reunited, and KQED's Frida Jabalo Romero was there with them in Guatemala City to watch what happened. Good morning, Frida.
Hi, John.
So this is one of the few happy stories we've heard thus far, and I want to play a little bit of sound. This is Philomena with her brother, and they're meeting for the first time in a long time. Here we go.
Mickey Mouse.
El Mickey Mouse. Y otro.
Yeah, so that's Philomena and her dad. They're crouching over this black backpack she brought with her from the U.S., and she was super excited to show her brother, who's two, Marvin, the toys she brought for him, including this Mickey Mouse doll. So they were trying to eat dinner at this shelter for migrants, and so there was food on the table. It was like a plate of rice and beans. It was the first time the family was going to, you know, have dinner together in more than 3 months, but all Philomena wanted to do was show her little brother these toys and, you know, touch Marvin and also, like, kiss him on the cheek. That's what she was into. And the other voice there is Philomena's dad, Nazario.
And, of course, Nazario was with his daughter when they were separated here in California. He also, you know, went through a lot of turmoil as he waited to be reunited with his daughter. I imagine he was feeling very good last night as well.
You could see it on his face that he almost couldn't believe it, that they were finally together. I think he was also very anxious and nervous in the hours before he finally got his little girl. And then after, he kept saying, wow, like, I'm happy, but I also feel like, you know, he was just relieved.
Contento. Me siento feliz de nuevo tenerle otra vez porque ya tener un tiempo así separado de uno se siente triste.
There he goes. You can hear her talking about
yes,
her brother.
Exactly. Yeah, she's right there. I mean, she sat next to her mom and between her mom and dad for dinner. Masario is saying he feels really, you know, he feels happy to have her back with them again. And because the time they were separated was really difficult for them, he kept telling me that he wouldn't eat. He was so worried. And then we also know from the family's attorneys in the U.S. that Philomena was crying a lot in the time she was in the shelter and sobbing so hard when Nazario would call her that she couldn't even speak. So she had a really tough time, too. And we'll be speaking with them today about what their next steps, you know, what they plan for the future.
And we look forward to that report. Frida, tremendous reporting. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
We're going to stay with immigration. The California Report confirmed earlier this week that another large caravan from Central America is expected to arrive at the San Ysidro port of entry next month. The California Report has also seen people seeking asylum turned away from the process by Border Patrol agents, as we reported several weeks ago. Well, we had a chance to ask Chief Patrol Agent Rodney Scott about these so-called turnarounds as well as asylum caravans. Scott oversees the San Diego sector, which is 60 linear miles of border, 8 stations, and about 2,400 people, give or take. Here he is.
So we hear allegations, and we take every allegation very, very seriously. I have not seen any proven allegations on that for Border Patrol agents. When Border Patrol agents arrest somebody, I don't want to overly simplify it, but our job is probably the simplest in this process. If anybody crosses the border in between the ports of entry, we arrest them. It doesn't even matter if it's a United States citizen. It's illegal to cross the border in between the ports of entry. They then get taken to a Border Patrol station, and the process is fairly similar for us at that point. The challenges at the port of entry, say with a caravan specifically, is if you get this massive wave of people showing up at one time, it takes a lot of time and paperwork to process them. So you have to make a choice. Do I stop all legitimate trade and travel, the commuters coming back and forth, the business just to handle these individuals? Or do you make an assessment, which is what we do, they're currently safe. They're not claiming a fear from Mexico. They're claiming a fear from some other country. So we basically put them in a queue, and then each one of them gets their turn, if you will, to be processed. That includes waiting in the line. Some people don't like that. I've heard a lot of outcry. But the only other option, literally, is to stop all other legitimate practices that are going on at that port of entry, which includes all the commuters here in San Diego that cross the border each day. Are you going to ask them to wait 2 or 3 days to go home? No, but that's how the process goes.
That's San Diego Chief Agent Rodney Scott. Tomorrow we're going to talk to him about the border wall. Moving on now to wildfires. The Ferguson fire has scorched more than 94,000 acres and has been burning for more than 3 weeks. It has caused major closures of Yosemite National Park, specifically in the southwestern part of the park. But officials say they are making good progress against the fire and are nearing 50% containment. Here's KQED's Sonia Hudson.
Highway 120, which runs east to west through Yosemite National Park, reopened yesterday afternoon after being closed for nearly 5 days. Park spokesman Scott Gedeman says the opening will benefit businesses along that corridor.
We're really cognizant. This is the middle of the summer, and this is a lot of time where a lot of these businesses are really dependent on visitors to, of course, keep their livelihood going.
Park officials have closed some of the most popular areas of the park indefinitely in and around Yosemite Valley. But Gedeman says when they move toward reopening those areas of the park, it won't be a smooth ride.
We both have getting supplies in and also staffing issues with so many people evacuated.
Gedeman says no landmarks in the park have been destroyed by the fire so far. For the California Report, I'm Sonia Hudson.
Today, the head of the DMV is going to speak to state lawmakers in Sacramento. These lawmakers want to know why the wait at the Department of Motor Vehicles is so, so long. I think the technical term is forever. But the truth is, we know why. People want a real ID, a driver's license that can be used to board domestic flights beginning in October of 2020. And to get a real ID, you have to apply for that license in person. So, the DMV has just announced a variety of initiatives to help reduce the number of tasks that require waiting in line. Here's DMV spokeswoman Jessica Gonzalez.
Our DMV Now self-service terminals. These are the registration renewal terminals where you can instantly get your registration card and your license plate sticker. And we're putting those into 10 additional field offices this month. We currently have them in 60 field offices. Later this year, we're going to expand to 50 additional grocery stores. We're already in 40 retail locations. So this will bring our total to 160 statewide.
The DMV is also getting extra money to bring extra hands on deck and keeping some offices open on Saturday for a half day. Well, let's talk about politics, specifically women running for office. Joining me now is KQED's politics and government reporter from Sacramento, Katie Orr. She's been working on a new project and is here to give us a sneak preview of women in politics and how these two meet, especially this year. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, John.
So let's talk about this project. What is it? Why did we decide to do it?
Right. So this is a project I'm working on with my colleague Miranda Leitzinger, and we have decided to call it The Long Run, because what this is looking at women who, for whatever reason, have decided since the 2016 election to step up and run for office, many of them for the first time. And we decided to call it The Long Run because, as we'll get into as this series progresses, many of these women who are running might not be successful. Most of them won't be successful.
And you found that it's not just Democrats reacting to President Trump. There are Republicans and others who are running.
That's right. Certainly, the story that we've been seeing primarily in the media is women marching, you know, and protesting and becoming involved that way. And that, to be fair, is a lot of progressive Democratic women who are responding to Trump. But I went through and looked at the women who are running for the first time for Congress in California this year. There are about 14 of them who are challenging incumbents, again, first-time candidates. And of those 14, 8 are Republicans and 6 are Democrats. So there's a pretty even split there. I spoke with a woman from the Center for American Women in Politics. She's a researcher there, Kelly Dittmar, who says, when most women are on the campaign trail, regardless of their political ideology, they're really just speaking a lot about issues that matter to them, really kind of homegrown issues. So in that way, the Trump presidency doesn't have a direct impact on those campaigns.
And actually, you have a good example of that, of course, from Sacramento. Tell us about it.
Right. So as part of this series, we're going to be following four women, getting weekly check-ins from them as they go about their campaigns. The first woman that I heard from, her name is Mayel Jenkins. She is a first-time candidate in her 40s here in Sacramento, and she's running for a school board position out here. And she checked in on the day that she had actually filed her paperwork to run.
And so I was there with two generations of my family, being active and participating in our democracy. So that felt like a real milestone today.
The sort of almost reverence you hear in Mayel's voice is something that we've been hearing in our responses from people. There's this sense of like civic duty, and there is this real sense of patriotism, I think, that plays a large role in why many of them have decided to run.
KQED is Katie Orr. Katie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. Collective Health. American employers are in the healthcare business. It's time they had the technology to drive it. CollectiveHealth.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
President Trump's proposed border wall is facing yet another challenge. Yesterday, a federal appeals court in Pasadena heard from attorneys who say the wall violates more than 30 environmental laws. Here's KPCC's Prisca Neely.
Ahead of the hearing, 20 people gather in front of the courthouse with a big banner that reads, "No walls in the wild."
When border wildlife is under attack, what do we do?
Rise up, fight back!
They're holding signs with photos of jaguars, butterflies, and other endangered wildlife near the San Diego border.
And all these species stand to lose if there's more border construction.
J.P. Rose is a staff attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, which is bringing the challenge. The group says the Trump administration skirted around dozens of laws that protect clean air, water, and endangered species, using waivers that have expired. The Department of Homeland Security argues that national security concerns outweigh environmental laws. The court has been asked to issue an expedited decision. A ruling could still take weeks or months. For the California Report, I'm Prisca Neely in Pasadena.
And finally today, the University of Southern California has lost its president. Max Nikias stepped down yesterday in the wake of a sex abuse scandal involving a school gynecologist who allegedly groped women during exams. Nikias came under fire over reports that the university ignored decades of complaints from victims. The now former president will remain affiliated with USC as president emeritus and a life trustee. And that's the California Report for Wednesday, August 8th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a good day.